It's time for Brother Larry's Sinner's Sunday. Oh yeah. You tell him, Larry. Brother Larry coming at ya.
Thank you, Brother Dre. Thank you, Lariats, and welcome. Welcome to Sinner's Sunday, this little spin-off show from the regular Tuesday edition of That Larry Show. This is where we kick back and cogitate about things of a spiritual nature. This is no corporate God provider we're running. No, you'll find no chrome or glass or polished marble here. No silk robes, no bling. Unless you want to wear some, that's okay. And just the four walls, that creaky warped wooden floor, and all those barca loungers and couches we scrounged from the Salvation Army. Why barca lounges and couches? Because we don't believe in ass-punishing benches. We cover a lot of ground here. Old Testament to New, Buddhist monks who morph into rainbows, agnostics to Zoroastrians. Last week we looked at one of the most popular stories in the Old Testament, one that laid the foundation for endless books and movies, really the first tale of an underdog, David and Goliath. And we cut right to the chase when David, a skinny kid, had the stones to face down one of the most fearsome foes of all time. We all know the outcome, but less familiar is the rest of the story. There's an old axiom that has proven true over the ages: fortune favors the brave. And because David was fearless, once he felled that giant, he soon was made king and went on to rule for 40 years, and had that cool six-pointed star named after him. And his fearless DNA carried forth for many generations, as from his family would arise the most fearless and famous of them all, JC himself. Nearly every story in the Bible has some wisdom to impart, with or without the spiritual underpinnings. If there was a lesson to be had from David and Goliath, it was simply, no guts, no glory. But last week we covered only the beginning of that story. David was a hero, but heroes often fail. And the second part of his story might be summarized with another brief modern-day maxim: karma's a bitch. As cool as David was, he was just a man. A flawed man, as we all are, especially when we get in the proximity of pointy women. What are pointy women? Probably the most coveted and sought-after females. They've always been around. They are pointy because almost everything about them comes to a point. Their feet, their fingers, the corners of their eyes. Cleopatra was pointy. So is Margot Robbie. Okay, you got the picture. So here is David, a hero for the ages. He achieved pretty much everything a guy could in 1000 BC. Fame, power, respect from all. And one night, he got insomnia, and he's schlumping around the palace in his robe and slippers. But he's still not sleepy, so he decides to go up on the roof and get some fresh air. And while he's up there, he looks down on his kingdom and sees the very pointy Bathsheba taking a bath. How he did that isn't said. Maybe she forgot to pull the shades, or maybe in 1000 BC there were no shades. Nonetheless, David gets an eyeful of her and just has to no more. So he calls one of his lackeys and sends him out to get Bathsheba and invite her back to the palace. Now, mind you, David has already had six wives, and Bathsheba is also married to a dude named Uriah, and he happens to be a soldier in David's army. Nonetheless, Bathsheba comes to the castle and meets David, certainly a rock star of his day. As a boy, he knocked off Goliath, and as a man and king, he had taken the Jewish people to new heights of success. So she had to have been impressed. Starstruck, no doubt. Compounding his star power, David also writes poetry and plays the harp. You gotta wonder what that was like. Maybe like this cover of Sweet Child of Mine by these harp-playing twins, Camille and Kennerly. You've got to see these two. I'll post a link to their video on the show page at thatlarryshow.com. Two pointy blondes on a desert road picking these over-the-shoulder harps. My, my. After many flagons of wine and some song and verse, pointy Bathsheba spends the night with King David, and not long thereafter, she sends word back that she is with child. King David's child. No big deal. He's king, and he's loaded. And he's already had 6 wives and plenty of kids. In fact, he will eventually father 19 sons and 1 daughter. So, he decides that Bathsheba should be his lucky 7th wife. But there's that pesky detail, that husband of hers, Uriah. Then, Davy flashes on a plan. He whistles up his general and tells him, look, next time there's a good and bloody battle going on, be sure to send this Uriah guy to the front and make certain he can't find his shield and that his sword is kind of dull or maybe his bowstring is frayed. Pretty soon, Uriah is very dead. So Bathsheba's free to marry David. She does and gives him 4 more sons. One of those kids is named Solomon and will become maybe the 2nd most famous king of the Israelites. But the story does not end there. David did a rotten thing, having Uriah sent to the front so he could get killed, and he'd have a clear shot at Bathsheba. And though the word is never used in the Bible, it is certainly a common theme, and that theme is karma. Usually they substitute reap what you sow. So how did fate, or God, bounce that karmic brick off David's skull? Well, his 3rd son was named Absalom, and he was a rock star, too. They said he was the best-looking dude in all the land and a smooth operator. He had a fancy chariot with a custom flake paint job, dub spinners, and a floating cap. He had the flyest outfits and tasteful bling. He was also the apple of his daddy's eye. But somewhere along the line, Absalom turned against the old man, declared himself king, and led a revolt. He also started fooling around with the old man's concubines. That was probably the last straw. David could not let that slide, so forces were marshaled to put down the insurrection. However, being a father and still loving his son, despite Absalom's contempt, David gave his army strict orders not to harm Absalom when the battle went down. As it turned out, Absalom had a Samson-style hairdo, of which he was quite proud, and pride do goeth before a fall. As Absalom was making tracks on his mule, I've no idea why he was on a mule and not a horse. Nobody ever looked cool on a mule. Anyway, Absalom gets his hair tangled in a tree, and that's when a dude named Joab comes along. They had a beef going back years. Absalom had once torched Joab's farm and screwed him out of a promotion. So, Joab puts 3 darts in his chest, and it's lights out for Absalom. When King David discovers his favorite son is dead, he comes unglued, and who can blame him? There is something about parental love that trumps all others. So it was a double dose of karma on the house of David. You can't feel all that sorry for him, can you? Kind of had it coming to him, considering what he did to Uriah. And although Absalom didn't deserve what he got, sounds like he was due some form of retribution. So what about our lives? We all like to see ratbags get what's coming to them, don't we? Makes us feel like justice is served and life is a sane proposition. Don't you believe it? Some of the most evil characters in history lived lengthy, pleasant lives. Sure, Adolf blew his head off in a bunker, but commie runt Joe Stalin lived a long and luxurious life. So did Mao, and together they were responsible for tens of millions of deaths. We all know lots of creeps who seem to skate through life with never a setback. Where is their karmic comeuppance? One can only hope that hell is real. And or subscribe to the teachings of J.C., who was pretty big on the forgiveness thing. Forgiveness is such a strange word. Does it mean that if someone does something awful to you, you just say, well, that's okay, I'm not going to retaliate, or I don't hate your guts? If that's the definition, then that's asking way too much of most people. But there's another definition of forgiveness, and that means deciding you are not going to feel angry or resentful toward someone. That's more of a self-healing mechanism, I suppose. If you walk around in a constant fury, that's going to define your life. But if forgiveness means putting it behind us, at least pouring wet concrete over it like the Ruskies did at Chernobyl, well, that makes some sense, doesn't it? So there you have it, the rest of the David and Goliath story. I suppose no one is ever pure hero or heel. Hey, thanks for hanging with me once again, everyone. Come back and see us this Tuesday for the regular show at ThatLarryShow.com. It's our Halloween special, and it will scare the hell out of you. We'll see you then.